Session number 17628, Mr. Joseph Clark, reel 19.
J. Clark, reel 19. We're talking about life in the books, Mr. Clark, and you've mentioned the fact that you slept in the RAP. We've mentioned water and we've mentioned food. Latrines, was that very similar to what it had been in the other places? Or did you just dig your own little holes again?
No, in the areas they had... must have come from the Pioneer Corps. They had places where they could put two petrol tins with the tops cut off. They could put them together, fasten, and they had a wooden frame about what? The petrol tins would be about 18 inches. They weren't jerry cans. We didn't have jerry cans. And... they used to fasten them together with a more or less like a wooden frame that had been made. And there was two or three of them. They would be in each area, I suppose. I know they were in the HQ area. And they had this frame keeping them together. And they were able to... excreta went in one tin and the urine went in the other tin. And of course, after that, the Pioneer Corps men section, it was their job to dispose of that. They would probably have a trench dug to get rid of it. But somebody, you know, in the desert with flies and things around, there was an idea. It'll have come from somewhere. Put a lid on them to seal them, and what they used for hinges was a piece of rubber tire from the tire of a truck, and they fastened them onto this wooden frame and onto the seat, and you had to lift the seat up to use the toilet, and then of course when you left the toilet it came down and the rubber brought it down like a hinge. Now that, I saw that in the desert. But there's a lot of people who doesn't know what a desert rose is. But a desert rose was, you had to dig a trench, or a hole, let's put it, say a hole. It needn't be very wide. Maybe the yard is the most. And they got these petrol tins that made them into a funnel. What they did first, they put some gravel in the bottom of this hole. A lot of gravel. Then they made these funnels, maybe it's about 4 feet long, something like that. And they made them into funnel, and they sank the funnel down the middle of this hole that they dug. And then they filled it up with gravel and sand, till it reached the level of the desert, which left about 3 foot sticking out of the desert. And they took the corner of a petrol tin, and they put holes in it, and they fixed that in the top of the pipe that was sticking out of the desert. So if you only want to urinate, you went to that desert rose. And that didn't stop on the ground level. It went down through the sand and gravel into the desert. And that kept this area in a good condition. And that was a desert rose. A lot of people do not know what that is. That was. And I can remember they would be dug at various places, but I definitely know about that.
You mentioned flies there. How much were they a problem?
No, they were always a problem. We had a fly swat. They used to swat them with... There used to be... I think there was a notice put up in different areas. Swat that fly, kill one now, means thousands later. Yes. Now that was what... I never smoked. But if I ever went to the toilet, if there was a man sitting there who was smoking, I didn't bother. It was all right, you used to shift the flies. A lot of them used to smoke to shift the flies if they went to a toilet. Of course, there was a lot that didn't use the toilet. They used anything that they'd, you know, out of the way, dig a hole. But they weren't supposed to, not in the area.
Eating and drinking, was that difficult with keeping the flies off it?
Oh, yes. You were always swatting them away, you know. Especially when you had stew and that. You're more or less hiding, covering it up, you know. Of course, there was lads got jippy tummy. There was a lot of jippy tummy, you know.
Any other creatures in the desert that you saw?
Strangely enough, when we got into the Ghazala box, there was a dead camel, not very far from where we were. HQ and the MO had seen this, apparently, and he told me, or I was instructed by somebody, it had to be destroyed, got rid of. It was already destroyed, it was killed. And I had to take four men and get rid of this camel. And we dug a hole. Pretty big, so it would take the bones and what have you, this camel. And then we set fire to it with petrol. And we made sure that we were standing upwind. Because the wind was blowing downwind. Anybody down there would smell it. But as lads and me, we sat and we waited to burn out, you know. And the hole that we'd already dug, we dug it upwind. So that when it was all burnt out, we had to put it into this hole, seal it up. And that was one of the strange things that job I got in the desert. And it was, but I made sure we stood upwind, so that the smell was going away. Of course, things like that had to be removed, or else you'd finish up with diseases.
You would be wearing your khaki drill.
Oh, yes, topi, you always had to have your topi on.
How did they combat sunburn and that kind of thing?
Was there
a problem?
I think if you were digging, you were only allowed your shirt off for 1 hour, I think. I'm nearly sure you were allowed 1 hour and then you had to have your shirt back on again. Otherwise, you would finish up with sunstroke. Of course, you had to keep your hat on, your topi. Some lads were wise. They used to fasten like a handkerchief around the neck, because that's one of the main places, the back of the neck. And they used to cover that, you see.
Did you have sunburn cases coming to you?
Well, there was some, but not too severe. Not too severe. There was one lad... somewhere out there, he was one of these lads that had a skin that it didn't fend off, you know. He used to pick it up quick, but he was told always to keep, you know, your KD shorts, you could fasten them, you'd lower them down, fasten them below your knee if you wanted. And he was told to keep it was mostly his knees that were covered up. He had to get them covered up. But there wasn't a lot, really. No.
You get used to the heat, no doubt, through time.
Well, you get acclimatised. You're acclimatised, you see.
Did it get so hot that there were parts of the day that you couldn't do your work?
You had a siesta in the afternoon. unless you're on duty, you know, if you're on stand two or anything like that.
Again, was mail coming into you?
Yes.
It was coming quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, your mail would be censored.
It was all censored. All censored.
Did you see much of the Padre? Did he make his rounds?
He was a sky pilot. They called that Padre. Now, was it? We had a Padre called Haythornthwaite. Was it? I think he was in the desert. Because he was a captain as well, you see. Oh, if you even before that, if you went on route marches, you know, he had to have his church parade afterwards.
And you had church parades in the box, did you?
Well, there were services, you know, he carried them out. They weren't in a big scale, not battalion-like. You couldn't afford that. Because there was always spotter planes coming over, you know.
Did you see much of him between services? Did he get round the troops at all?
No. He would be going round among the battalion, you know. I suppose his work was cut out. He might have been going to brigade as well, you see. I don't know where he's. But we used to say, I'm nearly sure that was his name, Haythornthwaite. Because I thought, it's a long name, like. He was all right. The lads used to call him, if he was calling him for a service, you know, a small service, he used to call him a sky pilot. Of course, just typical, isn't it?
The heat of the day, what was the temperature like at night?
Cold. Sometimes we used to put our overcoats on. I used to often wonder when they used to say when the sands of the desert grow cold. It did get cold. Oh, yes.
Get very dark as well?
You never had a twilight. It used to be light and then dark.
Was it difficult moving around in the dark?
No, not really. Not really.
You could find your way from one spot and back again.
Oh, yes.
Navigating in the desert when you were out wherever with trucks, was that difficult?
Oh, well, if you were in convoy, you had to navigate in the front. And I always used to think if you're travelling in convoy, I believe we were travelling at about 120 yards distance, either side, front, back and the side. And a convoy, if it's going to turn left, it doesn't swing left like a curve. You're turning the length of your vehicle. So that if you're going along and your vehicle's going that way, if you turn left, the vehicle on the side is in front of you then. You turn like that.
You turn behind the vehicle, that's on the side of you.
Yeah. But they used to have, it wasn't in the manual, I don't think, but whenever the convoy stopped, you had trucks on either side, 120 yards, I used to think, and in front and back. One man had to be detailed off to stand up on the truck, and he would have two shovels, anything, two, and he used to stand with them like a letter V. And he had to stand there, and all the trucks all the way down that line was like that. Someone was standing up in that truck. And when the navigator moved off, all those used to come down together, or they're supposed to come down together, and the convoy moved all as one. That was the object. You couldn't have a convoy keep hop, skip and a jump. It all had to move as one. I can't remember the name of the officer that was in the desert with us. But he was out in front, and he had his flag up, you know. You could tell he was the convoy. We used the St. Andrew's cross a lot up in the desert on our bonnets of our trucks and all.
I didn't ask you, did you have to dig your trucks in so they got below the ground, or?
No, not really. Not really. I suppose maybe the branchies would be dug in. No. Some of them might have been dug in at an angle. Sometimes you didn't have time.
And you'd have stand to morning and evening, that's mm-hmm. light.
Oh, yes.
What time might that be in the morning?
Still the 6 o'clock.
Around about 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Night time, what time might that be?
Well, they used to say night time 10 o'clock, you know, but you sitting around talking all the time, you know.
After being there some time, it must have, and of course things were relatively quiet, it must have got boring for you to fill in the 24 hours of a day. Or the
there's once or twice I went out to one or two companies. I had a great friend. He was a corporal in A Company. Been there from France and all. He was a militia lad like me. He's living in Australia now, Joe White. And he wasn't very far away from, and I knew exactly which direction to go to his. And once or twice I went over to his area to see if they were okay. Of course, there were stretcher bearers out there as well. You combine the two things, you see. Visiting them to see if they were okay, because they were deployed then to each company. And the only time you saw them was when the battalion was together.
And what was the routine, basically, in the evening after your work was done? Sitting in
Sitting talking. Some had, if you had a pack of cards, they'll play cards or anything
books,
like
were
that.
Were books available for you with the people bringing them up, the Salvation Army, people like that?
No, I never got time to read any books. No. There might have been, but I never got time to read any books. There was always somebody passing through, you know, or maybe stop and have a word with them. Of course, if there was any transport coming near you, of course, you had your pickets and your guards was on. You had to be the guards on. They weren't only at the openings in the wire. There was men on guard at each company and that. There'd always be somebody knocking about.
You never got the opportunity to run back to, say, Alex for a... Or at least up to the coast. Alex would be a long way off. Up to the coast for a day.
Yes, later on. There was, I don't know what the ratio was, but I think it was about 2% of a battalion. I would guess that. Say 15 men. And about every fortnight, they would be picked out. And some, I think there was 6 went to Alexandria and 9 went to Cairo. I think they deployed them that way. I should know because I got a leave to Cairo. From up here.
And what was that like when you got to Cairo?
Well, it took us as long to go down and come back as what it did in Cairo. I've got it written down in a book somewhere. We went down. Of course, there was 2 sergeants in charge of ours, I think. 2 sergeants. Strangely enough, the lad I just mentioned is in A Company, Joe White, the corporal. I don't know how it came about, but we were both picked to go on leave together. Yet I was in HQ and he was in A Company. There was two sergeants, 2 corporals, and the rest was private, I think. But an NCO had to go to Alexandria with the others as well. And the sergeant that was in charge of our party that went to Cairo was Sergeant Johnny Hill, great fella. I think he'd been a footballer for Gateshead in his time before the war. But he was in charge of the party. He was responsible for us.
Where did you stay?
We stayed at a hotel in which had been commandeered. They called it in Emad El Din Street. And they called it the Hotel Modern in Cairo.
Comfortable.
But before that, you see, when we got to Cairo, we had to go to the RTO's office with the sergeant. And our rifles were taken from us. Well, they were handed in, let's put it that way. And they were kept in, this was at the station. There was a place there, and these rifles were kept under guard by the RTO staff. And of course you had to report back to him before you left Cairo eventually. But the sergeant was in charge, but we didn't all get to the same billet. But there was four of us. Four of us went to the Hotel Modern, and I don't know where the others went. They went to a place not far away. But Sergeant Hill, we had to keep in touch with him all the time, each day, so that he knew we were all right.
How did you fill your time?
The first thing we all did was go and get a bath. And the next thing we did was go and get a haircut. That was in Cairo. We had a good look around. Many a time I wish I'd gone to see the pyramids, but that's by the way. We got the chance to go down the Nile, and there was a riverboat going down the Nile, and it was going to see the Nile barrage. And that's where a lot of people might not know, but there's two Niles. There's the Blue Nile and the White Nile, and this barrage was there, where the Blue Nile and the White Nile was. And we went down there on one of these. They weren't big boats, you know. They were. You could take your. You could even put your hand over the side and touch the water. But there was military nurses on and all, and there was officers on. I reckon there maybe be about 40 or 50 on there. And strangely enough, the boat broke down in the middle of the Nile. He nearly fried us. Red hot. And we didn't know what was going on. He was messing on with the sparking plugs at the back. The engine had conked out. And there was a big box, which was at the back of the boat. We didn't know where it was. And just about after he fried us alive, different wine up, by God, I could do with a drink here, or ice cream, or anything. You're just talking among yourselves, you know. The idea was a bottle of pop, you'd do with a bottle of pop. And after he just about fried us, up went the lid on this box. And it was like an ice box. And he had it full of stuff. Well, it didn't take him a crack to sell that. And we think we're wise. He sold it all. What was in there? Pop, lemonade, out that was in. And as soon as he got his box nearly empty or emptied, he went back. It didn't take him long to get them sparking plugs going. And away we went down the Nile. And that's a true story.
What did you think of the Egyptians?
They were clever. There were some clefty wallahs among them. They were clever. Of course, they would be the bad lads. Like. Otherwise, the Egyptians, we used to see them. First time I ever saw it, it was walking down the main street, and they were sitting in the doorways with the hubbly bubbly, which I learnt later on that was what they call coke now, isn't it? Hashish. I think that was it. And they used to have a couple of puffs at it, and because on the thing was standing on the pavement, they'd have a couple of puffs at it, and somebody else would walk up. He would stop and have a couple of puffs at it. But I think it was hashish they called it. But we used to call it the hubbly bubbly, the lads. Aye. That was another thing I saw, which I've seen since on televisions. We were looking out off the balcony of this hotel. Of course, it was a basic hotel then, of course. We still had to go out and get our meals, you know. That was more or less like sleeping accommodation mostly. And we looked out, we saw this whole crowd coming down away from the station in the middle of the street, carrying someone. It turned out to be a coffin. And they were all around it, in more or less a crowd, as you would call it. And every now and again, different ones keep changing over, getting his shoulder underneath it. And there were, it was a funeral. No, I'd never seen that before, and I've never seen it since.
How long were you in Cairo?
About 6 days at the most. 5 to 6 days.
And then, of course, you'd head back to your box again.
Yes. Yes.
Did you get the opportunity to go out on any of the columns or patrols from the box?
I didn't go out, but I went out twice with a section.
Do you recall what happened and how it was organised?
Well, the leader of a section would generally be an officer. And
that was just a small patrol, in effect?
Yes. You see, I have written down in my book somewhere, on the 27th, 28th of May, there was enemy action going on.
Just before you get to that particular, had you been out of the box before that?
Mm-hmm.
On a normal routine patrol or routine objective?
Just when we got in, the RAP was finished digging. I have written down on the 8th of March, that's when we finished digging the RAP, went to the front with the MO. Now what we had to do there was, somewhere out there was a, what would you call it? There was a section of men out there, at an outpost as you would call it. They were well in front of the wire, a few miles. Now their job wasn't to engage the enemy. If they were attacked, they weren't to engage the enemy. I believe their job was, they had a truck there, so it made a quick getaway. It was in a swally. Their job was to get away from there, back to the wire where the guard was. I don't know what gap it was. It was one of the gaps. And their job was to get through there, back into the box, and the guard would push the mines in and the wire across.
Like an early warning system.
Similar, yes. That was their job. And this must have been when I went out with the MO. And we went out in the truck, and we had to go past the guards, get permission to go through past the guard. We told them where we were going. Going to this outpost, and we couldn't take the truck all the way because you'd be exposed to the outside. We left it in a bit of a dip, and we walked the rest. And what had happened was, a man had taken ill, and the officer must have gotten word on the field telephone back to the MO, and he was suffering with sunstroke. His lips was blue, and the MO didn't give him water to drink. He wet a handkerchief or something and just wiped his lips and that, and his tongue was swollen. And we had some water on board our truck. Actually, it was for the truck, but we gave it to the officer and he shared it out among the men, I believe. We left him this can of water anyway, about 2 gallon in it. Of course, we might have needed it for the truck, but we knew we were okay. And we brought this fella back. He was only a few days before he got pulled round. He didn't have to go to the field ambulance.
So that was your first moving out?
That was the first time I went out in front of the wire.
Do you recall any of the times you went out with the section or patrol? Have you any memories of one of those? Prior to the, you know, the main German offensive, really, that time.
The troops that we were facing at that time was Eitai's. And I think they called them the Bersaglieri troops. I think that was their name. But anyway, there'd been a skirmish. And I think we had some machine gunners up there as well, you know, out in the front. And we always used to have the Cheshire gunners, Cheshire Machine Company. I'm not sure if it was them. It might have been. But there'd been